Blog Talk Radio.
You raise me up so I can stand on mountains. You raise me up to walk on stormy seas. I am strong when I am on your shoulders. You raise me up to more than I can be.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Empowerment Show here on Blog Talk Radio's featured World of Ink Network. I am your host, Irene Roth, and Via Scrinier is also with me today on the show, which is very nice to have her. The World of Ink Network brings you shows each week on topics such as books, writing, author interviews, self-help, and much, much more. Our upcoming shows for this month, for August, is as follows. Tuesday, August the 19th at 9 p.m. Eastern, A Good Story is a Good Story, host Marsha Casper Cook. She'll be talking with guests Rick Polson and Kelly Abel. I hope I'm pronouncing those names right. If I'm not, please, I apologize ahead of time. They'll be discussing marketing books in this very crowded market and trying to have your book stand out. Now, that's just so important and something that most authors really worry about. Is this really possible? Well, that is something that Marsha Casper Cook will be dealing with in quite a bit of detail. I will let you tune into that show to find out the question and the answer to the question. Thursday, August the 21st at 11 a.m. Eastern, there's a book discussion with best-selling author Kim Lowell. Again, I hope I'm pronouncing the name right. Your host is Fran Lewis for that show. And the topic will be Jasper's War by Kim Lowell. It's a great book. It's a thriller with raw emotion, hold your breath action, and strong female protagonist, which is very nice. Usually the protagonist is male. So this is a really wonderful change. I'm looking forward to that show, actually, and really listening in on it. Sure, once you start reading the book, you won't be able to put it down. It's just one of those thrillers with a lot of emotion and angst. Tuesday, August the 26th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, A Good Story is a Good Story with host Marsha Casper Cook. This is going to be a great show because it's called A Girls' Night Out kind of program where women can call in and just, you know, sort of relax. Her guests will be Ashley Fontaine and Joanna Lee Doster. So it should be a lot of fun, another show to really tune into. There's going to be quite a bit, quite a few laughs, I'm sure, and quite a few jokes, and just quite a bit of information, too, because all of Marsha's shows are just loaded with information. So you're going to definitely love that show. Last but not least for this month, Thursday, August the 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, book discussion with Fran Lewis again. She's talking about Air Force One with David H. Brown, so that's going to be a very interesting show as well. All of Fran's shows are great, and this one I'm sure will not disappoint. You can also follow us at our website at http://worldofinknetwork.com. Our blog at http://worldofinknetwork.blogspot.com, and, of course, Facebook and Twitter. As always, you can listen to any of our shows live on blogtalkradio.com/worldofinknetwork, or, of course, on demand at any time you'd like on Blog Talk Radio, Facebook, or iTunes. This show is a discussion-based show, so if you have any questions or comments, please be sure to call in and ask your questions or join in on the discussion with a comment. The number to call is 714-242-5259. That's 714-242-5259, or you can post your questions and comments in our live chat room as well, or on Facebook or Twitter. Today, we're going to be talking about empowerment and the importance of parents to empower our teens. And this has been a topic that, of course, I've been Sort of thinking about for many years, and hence my book that came out. But before I do that, I want to just say hello to V.S. Grenier. Hello, Virginia. How are you?
I'm good. And actually, I was going to add really quickly to the listeners, if you don't mind. We have two shows that were put in after the schedule went out, which I know happens a lot here at World of Ink Network, and we try not to do that. But Bennett Pomerantz, who had been in the hospital, who's back on his feet, and he did do a show a couple weeks after his back, is scheduled on August 23rd for his show under the new title, Any Which Way But Loose, with Bennett Pomerantz. He's a noted writer and a critic, and he will have on his show media guests to talk on just various different topics. And it looks like he's having, Sarana D. Wild, Sharon Kepps, Elise Day, and Candy O'Donnell look like his four guests for that show. And then, which I don't have up, so this is totally my apology to you, Irene, because you wouldn't know this, but the St. George Book Festival is kicking off October 20th out in St. George, Utah. And so I will be lining up, and I was just waiting to hear back from my guests for this coming Monday. But, what Monday is that? Because I don't know what Monday it is. On Monday, August 18th, I will have the Writing Mama show, and I'm going to have Dave Smith join me, who's actually the co-chair of the festival, but he's also the author of the Hidden Mickey series. And then basically every Monday after that are going to be authors that are going to be a part of the St. George Book Festival coming on, talking about their books, talking about the fact they're going to be keynote speakers at that festival. So it's going to be kind of fun on Monday, because it's going to be kind of getting people geared up. And there's also, for anybody who wants to travel to Utah, a one-day writing workshop on October 24th at Dixie State University that we'll be hosting with these various authors who will be on the show each Monday. So kind of a little shout-out on that.
How neat. My goodness, we have a lot more going on. We always have so much. Now we have even more. Well, that's wonderful. Thank you for that update, Virginia, because, of course, I wouldn't have known about it. Okay, so I will be talking about empowering teens today, and I'm going to start off with a definition. At certain key junctures in my chat today, I will be just, again, posting that number for you, the phone number to call in if you want to call in, and if you have any questions, so that if you didn't get it the first time, there's no worries at all. Okay, so empowerment, when we look at that word, we kind of go, oh, my goodness, what does it mean? Well, it means to authorize and to give strength, especially confidence, to our teens. And that's the hard part, I think. Usually most parents are able to authorize and certainly give strength quite a bit. But how do we offer confidence? How do we show them that they can do anything, kind of thing, and that they can take over the world if they wanted to, or at least take over, you know, control of their own emotions, their own beliefs, values, and so on, and live their own authentic life. So that is really the key to empowerment, I think, for teens. And the key of what our job as parents is to help our teens to become that best person, to become that authentic person later on in life. So we have to inspire our teens to be the best in a culture that really, well, it's not that it doesn't it frowns on authenticity. It doesn't, but it doesn't, it certainly doesn't encourage it either. So it's something that I think parents and educators too, but that's a topic for another show. We'll have to try and do as much as possible. Teens struggle, of course, with self-esteem issues, and they feel very vulnerable. We live in a culture that makes it difficult for teens to survive in some ways, let alone thrive and succeed. So parents have to step up to create this relationship with their teens that will foster this unconditional love and open and honest communication. And I'll be talking a lot about that in this show, because it's just something that I think it's key to opening up that kind of relationship so that we can inspire our kids to be empowered. But unless we have a certain kind of relationship with our teens, we won't really be able to communicate with them effectively enough so that they can, so that they can be empowered and inspired by us. So there are so many ways for our teens to feel vulnerable and uncertain. And we can, you know, sort of focus on that, but I think it's best to focus on other things, things that are within our control as parents, and some things we can control in our house, you know, and in our home. But it seems that a lot of times teens seem to drift and they seem to be uninspired and they seem to be unmotivated to do things. And this is something that we have to try and, well, bring them out of and probably lift them out of that and just move them into another sort of realm, the realm of authenticity, the realm of empowerment, the realm of inspiration, the realm of, you know, believing in yourself, and all of that wonderful stuff. So, and it's something that we can do here in the home. It's the best and most effective way to do it. So there is really no way to become authentic, you know, if we're just sort of following the crowd and if we're following the culture. So what we have to do is develop our own talents and help our teens develop their own talents as well and standing up for their own values. What our teens need most, I believe, is someone to say, you can be the best that you can be, and you are truly meant to be who you were meant to be, so that you don't have to be the same as John or Debbie, you know, across the ways. You can be someone that you truly are. And usually, given how things are going, it seems that this usually falls to the parents to inspire kids to do that and their teens to do that. However, to empower and encourage our teens in this way, we have to change the way we parent our teens. We can no longer simply allow them to drift through their teen years, for instance. Instead, we should take an active role in their psychological development and in their authentic development as well. Otherwise, it seems that the culture will dictate how our teens will act, and we need to develop our teens so that they will want to aspire to be more than the culture says that they should be. So before I examine how parents can inspire their teens, I will examine why some teens are reluctant to be empowered by their parents. But in the meantime, if you have any comments or questions, or you want to call in number again, or you want to just post your questions online, that's fine too. But the call-in number is 714-242-5259. Virginia, do you have any comments at this point?
One comment that came in was more of a question is when parents said that, you know, they're having a hard time getting their child to listen to them. You know, they try and sit down and ask about their school day, find out, you know, they have homework or tests coming up, and it seems that their teen is more interested in getting online and talking with their friends or being on Facebook and, you know, chatting, you know, on in that kind of, or even being on their phone text messaging. And, you know, there's, it seems like, you know, making the comment to their teen, I understand, but, you know, whatever the situation is, that it, using that terminology just automatically makes their teen shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they don't want to yell at their kid, but they're like, you know, trying to use those kinds of, like, I empathize with you kind of statements isn't working either.
Right, right. Well, I think, you know, it's just, it's hard when you're competing with technology, isn't it? I mean, it seems that, you know, you want to put in a voice there. You want to say, okay, you know, how was your day? Let's have a chat. Let's have this. And they just want to get right on their devices and, you know, start texting or, you know, continue the discussion they had on the school bus or continue the discussion they had before and so on. That's a hard one. I think it's something that will take time for parents to develop. But if there's a time, for instance, that could be a plug-off time, for want of a better phrase, when all technological devices can be shut off, even if it is for 10 or 15 minutes, it doesn't have to be a huge amount of time. That way, I think parents and teens can get into the habit of just saying, okay, after supper for 10 or 15 minutes, you know, make sure that you decide on whether it's 10 or 15, if you can make it as precise as possible, then all the better. And just say between, say, 7:10 and 7:20, there's going to be no internet, and we're just going to be chatting as a family. And then that way you can have that window of opportunity to, you know, to talk with your teens, you know. And that could be one way that you can do it. Or you can do it right when they come home from school, but give them a bit of time to sort of, you know, just put their books down and to unwind a little bit, and perhaps they can do their texting, you know, right away. But then between such and such a time, it's time to connect as mom and dad and, you know, teens, or, you know, whatever you want to call it in your home. Make it a mission statement, make it some kind of a, you know, something to look forward to at that particular time. If you stick to the schedule and you stick to the time, it will become habitual for your kids, and then they will probably look forward to that time, perhaps, too, that they can ask questions, that they can bring up things that they have during their day, and so on. So that's one way that I can see that kind of thing dealt with. What are your thoughts, Virginia?
I know I run into this because I have, actually, I just ran into this with my college-age student. I have my son who's going to be a freshman in college. And, of course, scholarships and, you know, applying for grants is, like, really important in their senior year of high school. And he was the policy captain on his debate team, so I understood he was busy between, you know, senior finals and just the senior workload in general, and then being the policy captain the senior year in debate, that we kind of didn't put, you know, we didn't expect him to carry a full-time job or even get a part-time job, because we wanted him to focus on that and, of course, you know, everything he needed to do for college entrance. And unfortunately, because I slacked off with the things you just talked about, we started seeing that our son was spinning because of the stress of that. It's easy for kids to escape into technology, and so he kind of flip-flopped and started putting 80% of his time into gaming and being with friends and 20% toward what he needed to. Because we backed off trying to, you know, not expect too much on him, knowing he already had enough demands. And that was probably the biggest, and my husband, of course, pointed it out really fast. And I, of course, was rallying behind my son saying, well, this is his, you know, last summer, his last opportunity. You know, he's got, and unfortunately, because I did that, I think it hurt him in many ways to where we didn't find out, I mean, some of his stuff that he applied for, you know, we didn't find out all the funding came through until earlier this week, and he starts on the 25th of August, and that was because I was trying to give him a break a little bit and let him rise up and not do the hand-holding, which I don't think we should totally hand-hold, but still to at least make sure that he understood that, you know, there were certain things that, you know, basically made accountability for him by the way I worded stuff or the way my actions were. He felt those accountabilities were gone, and like any youth, he made bad judgment calls, and I'm partly responsible for that. I take full ownership for that. And, you know, he was almost in tears thinking he wasn't getting into his college of his, you know, his first college choice because the funding wasn't coming through. And hard lesson for him. Definitely, I've woken up to what I will not do with the next couple of kids when they get to college. But, you know, so you know, I think sometimes we have to keep that into account, too, that even if we do have these practices in place, that just because other stresses come in our kids' life, by backing off on those, it's actually a disservice, too. That's something I learned recently.
Yeah, well, those are great points, you know, because I'm sure a lot of listeners are in the same kind of boat, Virginia, you know, and they're struggling with the same kinds of issues. It's great to keep that in mind and take into consideration, definitely. Okay, so I'm going to move on now and talk about why some teens are reluctant to be empowered. So we're going to switch gears a little bit now. The whole idea of empowerment for some teens that I spoke to is just like, oh my goodness, you know, what is this coming around the corner now? It seems like it's just another hurdle, another burden, something that we don't necessarily want or agree with, and takes a lot of hard work. A lot of them were saying that, just from the few teens that I was talking to in the last couple years, that it's some of their, you know, immediate reactions to the word empowerment and empowered, and what it means for them to be empowered. And here are a few things that they told me about why they don't want to be empowered or why they don't feel that that's something natural for them to do. The first thing is peer pressure. Many times doing more than the minimum and not following the crowd, for instance, is kind of countercultural. So teens may not want to stand out, for instance. They might not want to say, look, I don't think I'll be joining you tonight to go to this party. I have to volunteer or I have to do other things. You don't even have to give them a reason necessarily, but I can't join you tonight. All of a sudden they become, some of them get, bugged for that reason. Some of them get harassed for that reason. Peer pressure can be very strong and it can be very negative too for kids that are trying to stand out, that are trying to do something for themselves. And I know I was talking to a few teens that actually have this huge problem with this issue because in order to empower themselves, in order to be authentic, in order to be more than the culture dictates, they have to look countercultural, and that's not something they want to face. So this is one hurdle that they face when they try to become empowered. Secondly, teens don't feel like they can communicate openly with their parents. They feel that, I can talk to my parents, but I can't talk about anything important to them. It's like something happened, and we can't quite see eye to eye, and we talk about the weather, and we talk about my sporting events, and we may even talk about how I did on a test, but we don't talk about anything really important, and this can also lead to a huge communication gap between parents and teens, and I think it is just very important that parents find a way to talk to their teens. And just continue talking to their teens if possible. And I know how hard this is, and it can be wonderful in theory to say that, you have to talk to them, you have to be open and all of this wonderful stuff, but how hard it is to actually do that. I know that, Virginia, you have a lot of stories about that, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I do. Honestly, there's a comment post in here, and I'm not sure if this is an adult posting something from how they felt when they were a kid, or if this is actually, we have a teen posting this.
The comment
basically says that when they felt that when their parents asked them to do stuff, that it, after a time, they were constantly asked, like you're an older sibling, and this is the example they give, you're an older sibling and you're asked to, watch your younger siblings. At first it starts off like on date night for your parents, but next thing you know it starts becoming like a weekly kind of thing where you start feeling like your parents need your cooperation, and that if you don't, then they start to find ways to manipulate and coerce you into feeling bad. And so they said, they just made a comment that sometimes, I feel like that parents take the word empowerment and use it as more of a way to control, manipulate, versus to actually show their teens how to be stronger individuals, because they think by doing that, that's how they're making their teens stronger.
Oh, heavens.
Well, so I'm not sure if that's an adult talking about from personal experience or if that's an actual teen. And trust me, I understand that. I have a son, like I said, who's going off to college. And there are times because of the way my husband and my schedule is, we do need his help. But I always let him know that even though I need that, and I mean, that's been a huge conversation, actually, it keeps going, what are you going to do when I'm gone at school? And I'm like, we're going to have to adjust. But I always make sure that if he had priorities that need to be, like he had to go off to debate, it was going to be out of town, that I didn't say, well, you couldn't go to that tourney, you have to stay here. Like, I made sure he felt he could still do what he needed to do, and I would adjust, and find someone else. I mean, of course, parents want to turn to their teens first because it's cheaper, right?
Versus
paying a babysitter. So I've been in that boat, and it is. It's a very fine line, so I understand that comment. And I think it's a true comment. I think sometimes as parents we do misuse that, thinking, well, we're empowering you. This is what life's about. You don't always get to make your own choices. I've said that as a parent as well, which is probably terrible, but... Anyways, any you're the expert, Irene. So, what's your feedback on that?
I hope I am. Well, I think That's a problem, probably. Empowerment is a problem that way if you take the sole meaning of empowerment to be authorization. If you just say that, okay, I am the parent, and I'm going to say, you know what goes kind of thing, you know. And if you take that to the limit, to the extreme limit, then what you do is authorize, and that term empowerment can become that, pretty easily. So I think, you know, we all have to be careful about that. But I think you have the right balance there, Virginia, because what you do is you look at his schedule too, and you provide a balance, right? You look at what he has to do, and then you sort of, you know, you balance what you need to do, and then you take steps, right, to do either or. So I think that's the way parents should be perhaps going too. Yes, there is a very fine line, and I don't underestimate that comment at all, because there is, and it's very hard. Parenting is very hard, and that's especially hard to empower teens from that perspective, you know, because you don't know, you know, how far you should go on the authorizing side and how far you should go on the encouraging, inspiring side. So that's the kind of balance that it takes years for many parents to come to terms, you know, with. And it's still never perfect, but at least if we're working at it, I think that's all we can ask, right? I mean, it's not going to be perfect. There's not going to be a perfect sort of medium that says, okay, I got it now. It's perfect. This is exactly the way it should be. I don't think there's any families like that, right, Virginia?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, so the next reluctancy that teens have is sometimes teens feel that parents don't understand them. And this is just another sort of subset of what we were talking about before, communication. But I think also a lot of parents, they seem to lose touch with their teens. At some point, when our kids are kids, it's easy. You know, we take care of them, we're with them, and so on. But something happens in the teen years when they turn that corner into their 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th year, and so on. Something happens, and we lose touch of what's going on in our teens' lives. And some of it has to do with our teens. They become secretive a little bit, and all of a sudden they have friends of their own, they have times of their own, they have sometimes jobs of their own. They go to school, they go to work. By the time they come home, they're exhausted, you know. So it's very hard to keep in touch, you know. So we have to, as parents, find those times that are absolute non-negotiables when we are as a family, if at all possible, even if that's once a week, you know, just some time where you can just be together and talk. But talk not just about the weather and about, you know, things that are on the surface, but try and get deeper. And that takes time, too, because you can't just go from talking about surface things to talking about deeper things. Your teen will probably not want to go there. So you want to do this very slowly. You want to do it in a non-prying kind of way, in a way that doesn't feel threatening to them, so that they know you're there to understand and listen, of course, and that you're not going to be judgmental as much as that's possible. Okay, so that's another way that teens feel reluctant to be empowered. Also, sometimes teens feel that other siblings are better, smarter, brighter, more beautiful than they are. So sibling rivalry becomes a real problem. So that, you know, if parents start spending more time with the younger kids, for instance, well, then the teens sometimes feel left out as well. Sometimes years go by because, you know, when a child comes into a family, it can take years, you know, for the baby to become a toddler, to become, you know, a child, to become preschoolers and so on. So that those years go by, and meanwhile your teens get older and older, and so it seems that there was a gap in your communication with them, but you were spending a lot of time with the smaller children, which is totally understandable. It's the way it has to be. But I think what we have to also remember as parents is that if we have that gap in our families, you know, with different age groups, that we spend time with our teens as well, that we sort of have those times with them too, that perhaps, you know, whether it's our husband or you know, someone else can take the younger children for a few hours and you can actually spend time with your teens for a few hours. That can really help to bring that kind of understanding to your teens as well. Do you have any points on that, Virginia?
Nope, no comments there.
Nope. Okay. The next reason is some teens are slaves to technology. We spoke about that a little bit earlier. They're spending more time on their devices instead of talking, and teens feel that technology is where they should be, and talking and texting and so on into their devices, and not so much with their mom and dads and siblings. So that's also something that I've spoken to a lot of teens about, and they say that I prefer to be on my technological devices and talking about this and that with my parents. You know, it's easier. And some of them have even said that it was easier for them to text their parents about certain issues. I found that really interesting, too, they said they just didn't want to bring it up in person, that it was better and much more objective, perhaps, possibly even they felt in some cases a little bit more comforting and safer, perhaps, to just text their mom and say, "Mom, I won't be home until, you know, whatever, 7 o'clock or 10 o'clock or whatever it is," instead of coming home, facing your mother and saying, I need to be out here or doing this and that, and then, of course, Mom can come back and say a few things, right? So can cause communication gaps, which can further cause a kind of disempowerment for teens as well. And last but not least, teens feel that their parents criticize and reject them a lot, and they don't accept them and love them unconditionally. Therefore, they're reluctant to feel that empowerment is something that they want to even be by their parents. They don't want to be empowered by their parents because they think, well, my parents criticize me a lot. And I think they just reject me, and they possibly hate me some days. So, you know, why should I believe that they want the best for me and they want me to be the best? And this can become a huge problem. And I believe it's probably one of the reasons or overarching reasons why parents can't openly and honestly communicate with their teens. But this is possibly a side issue and a much more important issue that I'll probably deal with in a future show, because it's a huge topic. So that one is possibly best not to delve into too much detail now, although I will be talking about it a little bit later on when I talk about how parents can actually start empowering their teens little by little. Okay, so before I turn into some of the reasons why parents have difficult time empowering their teens, do you have anything to add at this point, Virginia?
There was one comment from a parent, the parent, and they were they basically asked, how would you deal with, because obviously you want to empower your child, but you have a child who's very combatant with you, you know, very argumentative, very, very much ready to basically fight you. And so the fear that this parent is saying is, if I empower my child, I'm afraid it's just going to make them feel like that they are more entitled to challenge us as parents. So how would you, basically defuse them being argumentative, at the same time empowering them in the positive way? And I can understand that, because I know that's become, I've heard that from parents many times when I've sat and talked with, my kids, friends' parents, and when I've gone to, school functions and stuff, and I'm just, hanging out with my friends and whatever. I know a lot of parents now are afraid to, spanking your kid now, if you spank your kid, and I'm not saying parents just go around smacking their kids around, however, because of a lot of the child abuse laws that are in place now, that parents are kind of afraid to have some type of, sometimes you can sit down and talk to your kid, I guess, is where I'm going with this. And I've seen this. This is my own kids. We're all sitting talking to my kids. I can talk to them until I'm blue in the face, be completely calm, explain to them why that behavior is totally not appropriate. And they don't care. And basically, just talk to me. That was it. And so you're like, okay, there has to be a little bit of a harsher punishment. So I'm sorry. I thank my kids. And, you can send child services after me. I don't care. But that's where I'm going with it. Is parents are afraid that, if they spank their kid or something, their kid's going to go screaming to the school counselor or their teacher or whomever and say, my parents abused me, because the kid just uses that as a scare tactic to their kid.
Oh,
and I mean, you know, yeah. not the parents, the kids use a scare tactic toward their parents. And so I think a lot of parents, at least what I'm seeing in the generations beneath me, and I'm talking mm-hmm. all the ones who are like 35 and under, that they're kind of afraid to discipline their children because kids have been empowered in a negative way that they can basically, call woof. And there isn't woof, and the problem is they don't understand the ramifications. That I mean, I actually have a friend whose kid did that, and they went, and child services came in, took the kids out, and her husband
wow.
lost his job and everything, and it was a complete false accusation. But so I think that's where this parent's going with that is, how do you empower your kids without empowering them to where something like that could happen? I mean, I'm obviously giving the worst-case scenario. I get that. But I think that's kind of where that question's coming from is,
mm-hmm.
with a child like that you think could possibly go that way, you want to empower
mm-hmm.
them, but at the same time, you need to take that combative behavior out, too.
Yeah. Well, there's many. Yes, it is. It's almost like a whole new show topic, isn't it? I think on many levels, I have spoken to teens that are extremely angry, that are argumentative, and they keep saying stuff like, I hate my parents, and, my parents can't do this. They can't help me. They can't do anything, and so on. And I think a lot of these kids probably need a little bit of counseling, quite frankly, but and that would be outside the ballpark of what parents can do. They just need somebody to talk to that's objective. There's a lot of reasons why, of course, kids and teens get that way. It's the culture a lot of times, in part, and I don't mean to be always bashing culture because I'm not. Please listen to me carefully. I do not want to bash culture because I think our culture is okay, too. There's so many great aspects about it. So, when you look at films, they're violent. When you look at some of the subtext of stuff, there's very little for our teens to pick up that's wholesome, that's happy perhaps, and that's, that doesn't provoke some kind of anger perhaps. And also, it's the quick pace, I believe, too, of teens. If you look at teens, they multitask. They're always doing two or three or four or five different things. They're not really peaceful or focusing on one thing at a time or just trying to be sometimes, many adults don't do that either, mind you, because, again, it's just a quick-paced culture, it's a quick-paced world, and it's, and we're pushed to go faster and faster all the time. And I think teens pick this up, and I think after a while they just get angry, and they always keep thinking they're not good enough. And they always keep thinking, well, there's something missing in my life, and then a lot of them just, spend too much. They believe that if they have this next gadget, they'll feel better. If they get this next pair of great designer jeans, they'll feel better. They'll belong. And they get it, and it still doesn't fulfill them. And they just get angrier and angrier. And I've certainly known quite a few teens here in this area that feel that way. They never feel good enough, and that makes them angry, extremely angry. And somehow, on some level, it would seem that the parents are, if not to blame, but they're not doing anything about it, they feel. Well, the thing is that what can they do about it, that other than, of course, trying to empower them, as I'm talking about today. It's a long journey, and it's a step-by-step process, and it doesn't happen overnight. But if you have a child that's argumentative like that, I would probably seek some kind of outside help, such as counseling. I would probably try very slowly and very very carefully just talking to the child, even if it is just a word or two, but very positive. Try, instead of being negative, try to be positive. Instead of criticizing, try to not criticize. And try, instead of being judgmental, try not to be judgmental. And if your child keeps coming back with anger, keep coming back with positive. Keep coming back with some of the, with love and unconditional acceptance. And I know it sounds counterintuitive right now, but it seems that after a while, the love and the acceptance sort of helps them out quite a bit to melt that anger and to help them see that, maybe my parents really are on my side. Maybe my parents really do care about me. You know, maybe they're really trying. You know, and all of these things, can really build relationships and help the teen come closer to you, and then you might be able to talk to them more often, at least, without having an argument, without, having a lot of the anger issues that come up. So that's my small way of answering this question. I think that is definitely a topic that I should be delving in future shows. Don't you think, Virginia, something like that would be really important?
It is a huge question. When I saw that, I was like, and I can relate to that because, I've had episodes with my kids where, just talking to them about consequence or whatever wasn't enough, and there had to be more of a consequence to their action. And, of course, our teenager at the time was spelling out all these kind of threats, and, and my husband's like, go ahead and call, if we have to, we'll call the police and have them counsel between us because, obviously we were going to have them try and use the threat to actually, cry woof, but, which scared the kid out of their pants because they were, we'll call the cops and bring them in if you think that's where this is going. They realized we weren't afraid, but not every parent's willing to do that and challenge that. It is, and it is a loaded thing because you want your kids to feel empowered. You want them to become good adults, but at the same time, you can't be afraid of your child either.
And I know
here, in the United States, that's becoming more and more of a problem where a lot of kids are challenging the authority of their parents. And it's sad to see. I'm not saying that's the majority, but it is a bigger percentage than when I was a kid.
It's out there.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh dear. Well, I have written it down for a future show. So, if you're the one that posted the question, I will be dealing with it in more detail. I promise. And it's a wonderful comment to make. So wonderful. Keep up the good comments, folks. Okay. So next, I'm going to turn into what are some reasons that parents. And why they're having a difficult time empowering their teens. Okay, so I just want to talk very briefly about this. Most of these are pretty obvious, of course. Why parents have a difficult empowering their teens first is because they don't listen. and they just they sort of talk all the time. That also puts a real damper on communication, especially if it's open and honest communication. It just doesn't happen when you have that kind of situation arising. So that certainly is a real problem. Not including your teens as part of lives or outings or times like that can also feel, teens can feel disempowered that way. Some parents also feel unable to empower their teens because they have low self-esteem themselves. That could be a real problem too in some cases. And, of course, there's a problem of parents that work two or three jobs, especially single parents that I'm thinking of in this situation. They come home, they're very exhausted. And, of course, there's no energy or time to empower anybody, much less themselves. So there are ways of handling these issues. This is a big problem. Again, all of these points that I mentioned could easily be shows in themselves and something that I will be looking at in future, but it's just something that I wanted to mention at this point. Okay, so before I shift gears, in case there's someone that wants to call in, the call number again is 714-242-5259. That's 714-242-5259. So you can call in and ask your questions or post your comments online as well. Okay, so my last section will be on looking at ways that parents could empower their teens. So these are some of the small little ways. Some of them don't sound so small, but I think over time, if you started small, you can probably, incorporate some of these things into your child's life and into your teen's life. Okay, so first of all, talk to your teens about their values and beliefs, as opposed to what the culture is dishing out to them. So many of our teens don't have a sense of what makes them unique human beings and individuals. They have followed their peers and the culture for as long as they can remember. In order to counteract some of these valueless aspects of the culture, we should take the time to help our teens determine what their values are. And this could be just as simple as talking about what their likes, dislikes are, what their hobbies are. Perhaps they enjoy dancing, perhaps they enjoy sports, perhaps they enjoy fencing, perhaps they enjoy, you know, whatever they enjoy. Sometimes values are derived that way too. So parents can do this by talking at length to their teens and encouraging them to take steps to develop who they truly are. Secondly, empower your teens to be the best that they can be by believing in them and helping them become more responsible. Teens are not necessarily encouraged to be their best in our culture necessarily. They're encouraged to just, well, kind of cruise along with others and sort of, you know, this is where, of course, peer pressure comes in and stuff like that. A cultural trait of our times is to probably simply roam through our, you know, text messages, text whenever we want to. I just heard from one of the teens that I know in this area that said that she can text up to some 100 times a day, so that's not uncommon either. So that takes up a lot of one's day if you do that. You know, so it can certainly, you know, put a real damper on empowerment or try to be the best that you can be. There's just no time. You know, you're just doing that, and there's just no time for anything else. So we have to try and show our teens that there's something more than just talking on our devices. We have to show our teens that, you know, we should probably be talking to our friends more and more in person as opposed to talking on the cell phone and texting and so on. It's a little worrisome that teens find it easier to text and to say what they want on through text as opposed to having a face-to-face conversation with another individual. And that includes the parents, sadly. A lot of times they text parents. So this is something that we have to be aware of. And, you know, just to show our teens that it is best to have that face-to-face communication, you know, and try to make it as positive as possible when we do get together face-to-face with our teens. Thirdly, don't beat up your teens when they make mistakes, and this is a big one. Of course, it depends, you know, on a lot of different things. But instead, it's important that we talk to them in a respectful way, in a calm way. Our teens will make a lot of mistakes, and we can certainly admit to that, and I know a lot of us that have teens that are grown up now can certainly say a lot about that. So we have to take steps to simply not beat them up if they make errors or to focus on how they can improve in the future. So instead of saying, you know, why did you do that, X, Y, Z, and just continue with the negative aspect of what they did, say, okay, well, this happened. It's really, you know, it's really sad, but let's make sure it doesn't happen again, you know. Let's make sure that we can take steps as a family to make sure that, you know, this doesn't happen again, you know. Because if we simply focus on errors, our teens will also focus on the negative in their lives. And this can become a guilt-ridden trip, and depression can arise as well for them. So I know that teen depression is very much on the rise here in Canada, and it's something that's, and teen suicide as well, sadly. So it's something that we kind of have to take into consideration as well as parents. It is, of course, the worst-case scenario, but it does happen quite a bit. So again, not beating up your teens is one important area. Do you have anything to add about that, Virginia?
Nope. I don't. No, there was a comment, though, in here that says, the parent says, I'm afraid my child, because they have weight problems.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, most people, you know, would say my child is obese, that even though I try and help empower her, that because of the peer pressures in life, it overwhelms anything I do as a parent to empower my teenager.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a tough one too, isn't it? I mean,
throwing them at you.
Yeah, but you know, it's an important one because I think it's a very important comment and a very important aspect of what we have to do as empowerment, you know, in empowering our teens. There are many ways that we can, of course, empower. It sounds like it's a girl, right? Is it a teen girl? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the thing we can do is, I think as mothers, we should somehow instill a very positive bodily image in our daughters. And that, of course, usually stems from ourselves. You know, we have to accept our bodies first before we can, you know, help our teenage girls accept theirs. But I have, there's a few times that I heard some really derogatory comments that I will try not to repeat here on the air, made by mothers towards their daughters that I thought, my goodness, you know, how can that girl be anything but, you know, really, really sort of self-conscious about herself? So that's one thing we can try to do. Again, I'm not saying that this is happening, you know, to you specifically. I'm very sure it's not. But there are mothers out there that will make certain comments, you know, even if they're sort of subtle, that'll really hurt a daughter, you know, and it will have a lot to do with her, you know, lowering her self-esteem and stuff like that. So we as mothers have to say, look, you know, you're great just the way you are. You know, you are perfect the way you are, as a matter of fact. You know, and if you can believe that, and if you can share that with your daughter, she will come to believe it too over a long period of time. Our culture, I mean, every time you look at magazines, all the models seem to be getting slimmer all the time. And it seems that slim and skinny and beautiful is in. But a lot of these people on the magazine covers, they're not real. They're computerized versions of the real person. So what we see on those covers is another image that we have to give our daughters is not the real person. The real person has flaws. The real person has warts. You know, the real person has curves. You know, she's not perfect. And none of us are perfect. You know, even the person that is that size 10 is not perfect. You know, she has the flaws. She will always point to something, you know, that has, whether it's cellulite, whether it's, you know, a wart on her face, whether it's a wart on her, you know, on her elbow or whatever, you know, we are just self-critical. We're very self-critical. And if we can not sort of transfer that to our daughters, they will feel much better. So empowering our daughters to feel, you know, good about themselves is a journey. It's not something that just happens. But I think by being positive and by telling them not to worry about the cultural images of what they see all around them, because that is just, of course, that'll make someone that is perhaps a little overweight feel worse. So it's important that, you know, that parents say, look, you know, what's on those magazine covers is not real. What models are showing, it's not real necessarily. It's not your typical woman. It's not your typical teenage girl. It's somebody that has an exception that is just different, you know. So we're all different, and we're all beautiful, so we just have to accept that, right? I mean, what do you think, mm-hmm. Virginia?
No, I totally agree. It's a hard one. I know, like, I'm definitely not a skinny mini anymore. I used to be when I was a track runner. I'm not anymore after having kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because I'm too busy. You know, I'd never sleep if I actually, like, tried to hit the gym every day. You know, and there's definitely that once you get over 30, you know, trying to keep weight off is harder. You know, and I commend the women who have high metabolisms and can do it. I don't. My metabolism, you know, the different things that make it function, some of it is not as active as it's supposed to be, and there's tests for that to prove that. So I have a harder time losing weight. And I know that, and my daughter, one of them, she's skinny. I mean, she takes more after her father's physique, so she tends to be thinner. But, you know, a lot of kids tend to, because of technology, we're seeing, especially like in teens, where they're getting what the term is called muffin top, where they have that belly fat, and it's because they're not getting the exercise in that part of their body like they need to. If my daughter has a little bit of that. I would say hers are more like love handles because she doesn't quite have a muffin top, but she's, you know, she's a little bit of the love handle thing going. And I don't point that out to her. I say, hey, let's go for a family walk. You know, mommy needs to lose some weight. And by me saying that, it takes it off of her to where she's not thinking, oh, my mom needs, thinks I need to tone that down.
That's great. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
What a great point.
And that's the thing. I mean, and I'm very cautious that even though I know I am 60 pounds overweight, yes, I just announced it to the world, I don't run around my kids when I'm putting stuff on or when I'm clothes shopping with them going, oh, this makes me look fat. I avoid using those words. I'm like, you know, this just doesn't work for me. You know, it doesn't, you know, doesn't. I don't feel good in this, or it doesn't look right. You know, let's try something else. I use that versus that makes me look fat, or oh my gosh, it's you know, it's showing, you know, the things I don't want to show off, because then it makes my daughters, when they're looking in the mirrors, look for those same flaws.
Exactly. Oh, I'm absolutely with you, and those are great comments because, you know, and I can certainly I can certainly feel the same way as you, Virginia, because I'm over 50, so, and it's hard for, it's even harder to lose weight after 50, so it's one of those things. But you know, when I'm with my niece, for instance, I'm very, very careful to make sure that I don't highlight anything, you know, that that will make her feel you know, self-conscious about herself. And she's a very beautiful young woman now, and you know, and I'm very happy that she is the way she is, and you know, I never criticize her. So that's great. Yeah. So these are all the various ways you can you know, you can empower your teen that way. So thank you for that comment. It was a really good one. Okay. Lastly, because I think I better wrap up pretty soon. Developing open and honest interactions with our teens is also important. We can do this by having face-to-face conversations on a consistent basis. So that's something I mentioned earlier. It's very important that we set some time aside, whether it's once a week, whether it's twice a week. If you can do it every evening, great, but I think most people's lives are not quite like that. So if you can set a time once a week to really chat with your teen and really chat, you know, you will be empowering your teen to chat with you and to be open and honest with you, and you'll be developing a relationship with them, you know. And some of the ways to develop an open and honest interaction with your teen is to listen more than speak, perhaps. Take the time to be with your teens. Any little moment that you can spend with real, you know, face-to-face interaction is great. Instigating plug-off times and having a zero tolerance towards constant noise, especially constant noise all the time. If you can sort of have times again where you can be as a family without technological devices, without TV perhaps, ideally, if possible, that would be best. That way you can have much more interaction with your teen, and you can set up those, you know, set up a more positive relationship, you know, with your teen that way. So, I mean, we all have a job to do as parents. We can lift our teens up so that they can be the best that they can be, and I really do believe that we can do this. It's a journey. It doesn't take one action or one day. It takes probably a lifetime of really trying, or at least you know, an extended period of time. So it is only through us, through the parents, that our teens can really feel empowered and inspired to live life fully and to be happy and content. So, you know, we really are the people that are the most important in their lives to teach them, you know, everything that they can do for themselves, to give them the confidence that they need to soar as high as they can. So that's all I have. Do you have any final comments, Virginia?
No, I don't.
No.
Okay. I do invite listeners, of course, to always, you know, come to our website, theworldbeatnetwork.com. Let's say .org, but it's .com. And then, of course, you write not every week, but you know, at least once a month. You are always putting out some really great blog posts on the Family Matters blog, which is Families Matter 2, the number 2. Blogspot.com. So I I invite people to come read those articles that you've posted on that site.
Thank you. And my next empowerment show, I just want to talk a little bit about that. It's going to be about the perils of overscheduling our teens. So I find I've talked to a lot of teens that feel overscheduled. They're enrolled in so many different music lessons, dance lessons, sporting events, and so on, and they play sports too. And I think that this can really frazzle our teens and make them feel stressed out and tired all the time. And this, I think, over time can be very disempowering to our teens, too. I mean, teens need to be teens sometimes. That doesn't mean that, you know, they can do what they want necessarily, but, you know, we just have to let them be, too, sometimes. So overscheduling can be a real problem. So I will be doing that show on Wednesday, September the 10th, right, Virginia, at 4 p.m.?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
we've moved to the second Wednesday of the month, so that will
mm-hmm.
be the time.
Yeah, so it's Wednesday, September the 10th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, so please join me then. Also, look for our World of Ink Network hosts on Facebook and Twitter. They're available there. And if you'd like to be on our shows, please contact us at http://worldofinknetwork.com. You can also find all of the services we offer for authors and publishers at that site as well. So until next time, this is your host, Irene Rose, on the Empowerment Show, found on BTR Worlds of Ink Network. and thank you very much, VS, for being with me. I really appreciate all your comments, and I appreciate all the comments and questions that came from the audience and the listeners as well. Thank you very much for that. So take care, everyone, and have a great day, and we'll talk to you real soon. Bye-bye for now.
Follow me to the World of Ink.